Are you outside the New York Stock Exchange? Okay. Then go across the street and sit on the large cement benches facing the exchange. The Stock Exchange was built in 1903 and has been making and breaking balls ever since. It's too bad we can't go inside now to look at the trading floor. The viewing booth has been closed to the public since 9/11. But when it was open on Thursday, October 24th, 1929, people got to witness history.
Sell!
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 Mr. Whitney, how can I help you today?
I bid 205 for 10,000 U.S. steel, my good man.
205? Did you just buy 20 million shares of stock at 10 points higher than it's worth?
That's Dick Whitney.
The vice president of the stock exchange?
He's buying it high to send us a message. The market's going back up.
And you believe him?
When the bigwigs pull out the guns for us, yeah, I do.
By October 1929, the stock prices had gotten so high, everyone started to panic, believing that it had peaked. And on Black Thursday, as the market lost $9.5 billion, the bigwigs from J.P. Morgan, Chase, and National City Bank quickly pooled together $20 to $30 million and sent Dick Whitney over to the exchange to stop the bleeding. It worked, that day at least. People stopped selling and the market held, but just for a little while. Cause while Black Thursday was over, Black Tuesday, October 29th, 1929, was still to come. Now let's walk up Wall to Broadway, stopping outside of Trinity Church. On Black Tuesday, there were 17 million shares traded, the highest ever. It took 15,000 miles of ticker tape to record all that, but all the trades were just stocks being dumped. In just 3 days, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the index of all stocks traded, showed the entire market had dropped by 23%. By November 1929, it was 40%. And by July 1932, the market had fallen 89%.
They used to tell me I was building a dream with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line, just waiting for bread?
For weeks after the October 29 crash, people crowded the streets around the New York Stock Exchange. They were in shock. Just last month, Yale economist Irving Fisher claimed that the stock market had reached a permanently high plateau. How could he have been so wrong? As the Great Depression hit in 1930, their bewilderment gave way to outrage. You should be standing outside Trinity Church on the corner of Wall Street and Broadway. Walk over to the gates on the right side of the main entrance. Originally built in 1698, Trinity is one of the oldest churches in the city. This building we are looking at now has been here since the 1840s, bringing spiritual and sometimes material relief to the greediest on Wall Street.
This the line for bread?
Yeah, but you've got to go to the end of the line. It starts around the block.
Listen, fella, I've got three starving kids at home.
You wait your turn like the rest of us.
By the early 1930s, factories had shut down and more than one quarter of the country had lost their jobs. Hoover didn't do much to help. And as the shantytowns they called Hoovervilles sprang up everywhere, churches stepped in to pick up the slack.
Hey!
Hey!
Come on!
Quit shoving! You ain't getting your bread any faster!
What is going on here?
Reverend, please help me. I've got to get some bread now. I've got three starving kids at home.
So do all these men. I'm sorry, my son. And if you don't stop fighting, I'm going to call the police.
Hey, kid. That's our cue to get out of here. Walk up Broadway and turn at Liberty Street. Stop when you get to the Federal Reserve Building at 33 Liberty Street.
9 mocking years with the golden calf and 3 long years of the scourge. 9 crazy years at the ticker and 3 long years in the breadline.
In the 1932 election, Franklin Roosevelt blamed Hoover and Wall Street for the poverty and despair. And the American people agreed. FDR was elected in a landslide on the promise that he would make Wall Street pay.
Yes, the money changers have fled from their high seats in the temple of our civilization. We may now restore that temple to the ancient truth.
And days after FDR's inaugural address, he got to work. In just a few months, he passed the Emergency Banking Relief Act, the Glass-Steagall Act, and the Securities Act, among others. And 20 years after Louis Brandeis exposed the conflict of interest between banks doing both commercial and investment work, FDR forced them to choose one or the other as part of the Glass-Steagall Act. In a matter of months, FDR had done more to regulate Wall Street than anybody in the last 100 years. And he took it even further. In 1934, FDR formed the Securities and Exchange Commission, the first government agency to watch over Wall Street and make sure they follow the rules. The idea for the SEC came out of the Pecora Commission, the government hearing to investigate the stock market crash in 1932.
Order in the court. Chief Counsel Pecora, you're a witness for cross-examination.
Mr. Mitchell, isn't the National City Company the largest investment company selling securities to the public?
I should think probably, but I would not want to make any boast about that, Mr. Pecora.
Excuse me, Senator Cousins here. I have a question for Mr. Mitchell. Doesn't the bonus system offered at National City Company inspire a lack of care in the sale of securities to the public?
I can readily see that it would seem so. At the same time, I don't recall seeing it operate that way.
You wouldn't. Only the public would see it after they got the securities.
The hearings made it crystal clear that their former beloved Wall Street bankers had been willing to sell them any kind of risky stock in order to make their bonus. Stop at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York on Liberty Street between Nassau and Williams. You can't miss it. The building takes up the whole block. Built in 1924, it's got something none of these other skyscrapers have. A basement vault loaded with billions of dollars worth of the world's gold. In 1933, FDR took the dollar off the gold standard to stop deflation. But people were still hoarding their gold. So he passed an executive order making it illegal to keep it. Everyone was ordered to go to a federal bank by May 1st to swap their billions for bucks.
Excuse me, sir. Is this the line to turn in our gold?
Right behind me, miss.
Next. Step inside.
Sir, do you think the bank will give us what the gold's really worth?
They better. This was my life savings.
Me too. We kept it under the mattress until Mother heard President Roosevelt on the radio. She said to trust him and the Federal Reserve.
If you can't trust them, who can you trust?
Now, FDR didn't just make all this stuff up by himself. He followed the British economist, Maynard Keynes, who believed that capitalism would only really work when the government regulates the market. It was a revolutionary idea that could have led to a truce between Hamilton and Jefferson. Because according to Keynes, a central bank could both push and curb the market at the same time. FDR went down in history for the New Deal, his economic programs that gave us a social safety net and protected us against shady Wall Street practices. And even after World War II, when America's jobs and business came roaring back, Wall Street was still blacklisted.
Extra, extra, read all about it. Dick Whitney gets 10 years in the slammer.
Dick Whitney? The old blue blood from the New York Stock Exchange?
Caught with his hand in the cookie jar, mister. Stole over a million smackaroos.
Not Dick Whitney. I can't believe it.
Believe it, mister. Tons of other people do. There were thousands down at Grand Central to boo him when he got on the train to Sing Sing.
Another Wall Street lowlife. FDR was right. So who'd he steal from?
Mister, if you really want to know more, just buy the paper.
Dick Whitney, our hero from the stock market crash, had been embezzling for years. His arrest in March 1938 was the final nail in the coffin. Wall Street was dead. Or so we all thought. To hear how Wall Street was reborn into Main Street, head to Walk 7.